Welcome to chapter two. Chapter two? It's the end of the semester. What gives? Well, folks, in our text, they put this chapter at the beginning of the textbook, buying and selling securities. And I just vehemently disagree that this is where this belongs at the beginning. It just doesn't make any sense for us, in my humble opinion, to concentrate on buying and selling securities when we don't even know what they are yet. We had not discussed them by that time. And they go into far too much detail about selling short and margining and things that you just don't need to concentrate on until after you understand what these things are. So that's why we've left them to the end. Okay, is that good? I hope so. And what we're going to find is some of these exercises in this chapter are almost, if not as difficult as the options exercises. And yes, they are on the Series 7 stockbroker exam, and they are not easy. Because, again, there's two sides. There's long and short. And there's margining, where you have to learn about borrowing and all. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But we'll start with a discussion of brokerage accounts. Slide number two. There are three main types of brokerage accounts, folks. There are the traditional full-service brokers, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and they provide investment recommendations and take you to golf, and they usually want you to pony up at least $50,000 or $100,000. Some of them say things like, "Well, I don't take a client for less than $500,000 or $1 million." I mean, they say it with a straight face too, and they say things "Well, I'm not making any money talking to you right now. I mean, that's why I." And I guess it appeals to some people who think that I don't want anything to do with them. But that's my personal opinion. They're not cheap, by the way. The discount brokers used to be plentiful, but there are really not that many huge, big ones left. The big discount broker is Schwab, Charles Schwab, and they're actually not a bad group. There are lots of sometimes called mom-and-pop shops, where a broker may be working alone, or maybe a few others. You might have heard of Edward Jones and A.G. Edwards, where, I don't know if A.G. Edwards does anymore, but Edward Jones will help you as an individual broker set up a small shop, and you give personalized service, but you're not charging what the Merrill Lynch's of the world are charging. And then the deep discount brokers are often called the internet brokers. These are companies that have emphasized technology to reduce brokerage costs dramatically. Yeah, E-Trade's not Scottrade, Ameritrash, these individuals who emphasize the internet, and you never talk to a broker, let alone know who your broker is. What can you expect from each? Are you going to pay from each? Well, what do you expect, huh? Before it was 1975, there were no discount brokers. Everybody's paid, basically went with full service and paid a lot. Then the discount brokers came on the scene in 1975, I guess probably because the government made them do it, because who would want to have to compete? So trades went down from $100 or more a trade down to $45, and then $29, and then $19, and then $13, and I think Schwab, last time I checked, they're down to about $9 a trade is what I saw. Again, you don't talk to a broker or anything. And the deep discounts can be even less. $5, $7 for Scottrade. And now mutual fund companies have gotten into the brokerage field, Fidelity and now Vanguard. And so they've set it up so that you can buy and sell individual stocks and bonds and the like, but you get to buy their mutual funds commission free, which is one of the gets rid of one of the problems with ETFs, because ETFs you have to pay commissions on the exchange traded funds. Most of them are index funds, and so Fidelity and Vanguard say, fine, you can buy and sell our ETFs without any commission. Now, there's probably a limit on how many times you can do that, how many transactions you can do. Because you see, the problem with an ETF, if you're buying it $50 a month, is you're going to pay a commission to a brokerage firm. It could be $7 or $12, so it doesn't make sense. But Fidelity, Vanguard said, no problem, we'll let you buy our ETFs without any commissions. And Fidelity has lots of other funds, too, not just theirs, lots of others. Now, a couple of companies experimented with $0 what? Yeah, well, the one failed, and the other one, Zecco, is still around, ZECCO.com. They now charge $5 a trade. What's going on here? Wait a minute. How can a brokerage firm make any money with a $0 commission? In fact, how can a company make money with a $5 or $7 trade? Well, I don't know if you remember this slide, but slide number 4, it's from chapter 5. The following disclaimer is placed on each trade confirmation from Scott Trade. Scott Trade Incorporated receives remuneration from directing orders to particular broker dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm, and the source and amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. Yeah, it sounds like it belongs in some medieval mass in Latin. But what are they saying, folks? They're saying that they are using particular dealers, market makers, remember, who make money off the spread, and that you may not get the best price, and these broker dealers are kicking back. Remuneration's a fancy word for a kickback. They're sending some of that money that they made off the spread back to Scott Trade. Now, in Scott Trade's defense, at least they prominently display this in every email confirmation that they send you. But one of the things you know that they don't really want you to read it is they put it all in uppercase. It's counterintuitive, isn't it? All uppercase. It means it's important. It means you should read it. The problem is it's hard to read all uppercase. Our eyes are just not, it's not good. It's not easy on our eyes to read all uppercase. So they put it all in uppercase to make it look like they're trying to make important stuff, but hopefully you won't read it. And you can ask them, what was the real amount that I was charged? And they'll tell you, but you got to ask them. So, does Schwab do this? No. At least it's not in their broker agreement. And I called them up and asked them. They said, no, they don't do this. Certainly the traditional full service brokers don't do it. But then again, you pay a lot more for their commissions. Slide number 5. Brokers have gotten a bad name, sometimes rightfully so, being paid on commissions. So now there are alternative methods for screwing your customers. Paying your broker, charging your customers. As the competition for your business has gotten fiercer, the methods of charging investors for investment services has gotten more, creative. Merrill Lynch experimented charging $3,000 per year for unlimited trades. They'll charge you $3,000 a year, but they don't do that anymore. There are many other methods. The new modern-day agogo way to soak clients, charge for brokerage services, is called wealth management. Wealth management. We discussed this before when we were discussing the Class F mutual funds shares. Do you remember? A wrap account, a financial advisor account, a wealth management account. Instead of charging per transaction, the brokerage firm tacks on a yearly 1 or 2% wealth management fee. We're not your brokers. No, 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 no. We don't operate on commissions. No, 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 no. We just charge you an extra 1 or 2% in perpetuity. These types of programs are being pushed by all the major full-service brokerage firms and the mom-and-pop shops, the discount brokers. There are many flavors of this program. And the latest wrinkle to this method is the new performance-based wealth management. Doesn't that sound tricky? Slide number 7, performance-based wealth management. Only pay your advisor when you make money. Ooh, let's see. If you lose money, then you don't pay your advisor. But the advisor receives 10 to 20% of your earnings when you do make money. Wait, what? What? You make 10%, they take 1% or 2%? You make 20%, they take 2 or 4%? What's going on here? It's a variation of the way that hedge funds charge their customers. And it started, early 2000s or so, currently marketed to high net worth investors. And I was at this seminar by Dunham and Associates, and they used to be local. I don't know where they are now. I somehow fell off their mailing list. They were sending me stuff, and I checked them out. And what's going on now is that they are now charging a minimum. Some of their sub-accounts, they call them. You used to not pay if you weren't making money. So say your account went up to $50,000. If it goes down, you don't pay for services until it comes back up to $50,000. Now, that sounded great as long as the market was continuing to go up and up and up, but since 2008, it's still, most people have not made their way back to where they were in 2007. So now Dunham & Associates now charges some amount, because, I mean, they're going to go out of business if they don't charge. And although it may sound tempting, the reality is that you have the potential to pay far, far more for your investment services. Yeah, folks. Yeah, if the market goes up 20%, they're going to take 2 or 4%? Wow. I don't know. I'm not interested personally, but that's, you know, why there's coffee and tea and some people like cocoa. What do you think? Check them out. And then how about the anti-brokerage firms? What? I apologize. On the, I said something when I was discussing account types in the miscellaneous. I said you might not have to keep your money with somebody, and I was in the wrong presentation when I said that. So you might say, as we'll learn, you might not have to keep your money with a brokerage firm. You're right. You don't have to do it. So I apologize. I was in the wrong presentation. I should have said it here. You can bypass the middleman and go directly to McDonald's or IBM or GE and say, I'd like to invest in you directly through a dividend reinvestment plan, a DRIP. And they're very happy because they know that most dividend reinvestment plan investors are in it for the long term. They're long-term investors, and they love long-term investors. These are people who want to own a company, not rent a company. They want to own the stock, not rent the stock and keep it for 3 weeks or 3 months or whatever. So they don't charge you any, or they charge you, you know, pennies. If you remember Chapter 5 and look at if you don't remember that, go back to Chapter 5. The dividend reinvestment plan for Sempra Energy was charging, I think, 3 cents every once in a while, 9 cents every month or so, or a quarter. And that was just to cover their costs, and their costs are obviously very minimal. And so this is a great way for long-term, value-oriented, buy-and-hold investors, because it's mostly the well-established companies that have these plans. And there are some groups that allow you to congregate, you know, aggregate your DRIPs in one place. Because, you know, nothing's perfect. If you have drips with 18 different companies, it means you're going to have to sift through 18 different statements, which is, you know, not the end of the world. But NAIC, the NAIC, right, the National Association of Investors Corporation, the people who sponsor the investment groups, betterinvesting.org, they used to have their own program, but now they use a company called Folio FN. And I don't know much about it, folks, so I shouldn't say anything other than to point you in that direction if you're so inclined. But the DRIP program with NAIC used to be pretty darn cool. $10 a month, you know, it's $120 a year. It's not bad. And they would allow you to put all your drips in one place. But now many brokerage firms allow you to do the same thing. And they really don't want you to do. They don't really want customers like that. In my humble opinion, they want people who buy and sell and buy and sell because that's how they make their money. They don't want people who are buy and hold kind of people because, well, you know, it depends. Find somebody who you trust and stick with them. Yeah, the same thing is true of lawyers and doctors and mechanics and plumbers. And think about where you're going to keep your stocks. Now, there's another way that I don't even know to put on here, and that's to take them in a certificate form. Don't do it. Don't do it. They'll charge anywhere from $25 to $50 to issue the certificate. And then $25 to $50 to redeem their certificate because they don't want to handle these things. Everything's electronic, folks. So don't do that. Okay. All right. And on the website, I asked people to of course nobody uses the discussion. Somebody posted on the discussion board a while ago. I was so happy. Or send them to me. If you have any specific kudos or good things to say about a certain brokerage firm or bad things to say, I could share them with the other students. All right, when we come back, folks, we're going to get into margining. Margining, that's our next session, and then the one after that is shorting. So this was pretty straightforward. You didn't really need to be stretching your brain on this one, but next when you come back, you better have your brain all worked up and warmed up because you're going to need to really use it. See ya next presentation when we discuss margining.